Welcome to The Hours, everybody. I'm Claire, and I'm joined today by a very special guest, Camille Zimmerman. Camille's not just a Columbia alum, but holds the all-time scoring record and rebounding records at Columbia. After super successful D1 college career, Ivy League education, all of that, continued playing pro overseas, several countries, and represented the U.S. in FIBA 3-on-3 on the global stage. Camille, thank you for spending the hours with us. How does it feel to be back in Arizona?
That was great. I'm happy to be here. I do have to say I did lose my all-time scoring record last year, but, you know, it's still something to speak of.
You're in here. You're in there. I mean, I really didn't realize. I Googled you. Like, obviously, we've known each other for, I don't know, a year or two. Interacted in different ways throughout Savvy, but I don't think I had actually Googled you. And to make sure I knew what I was talking about, I looked it up, and then I'm like, oh, almost 2,000 points, almost 1,000 rebounds, like record holder in 6 categories, all of these things, top 10 in like player of the year nationally. Wild stats. Wild. Are there any for you that, like, I don't know, hold a special place in your heart?
I think the scoring one was pretty fun to have. It was hard. Like, I think a lot of people say, like, in the moment, you don't care about the accolades. And my team wasn't that good. So I got to play a lot. I got to score a lot. So, you know, I'd break a record. We'd lose a game. Break a record, lose a game. So it was just, like, in the moment, didn't feel that great. But the scoring one was pretty special just because I broke, like, the men's record. So I think that was just, like, a fun thing to always say, like, I was better than the men. I just thought was fun. So I think that one was a pretty fun one to have. And then I think one of the weeks, my senior year, I got National Player of the Week. And that one was pretty special, too. Also, we played a quadruple overtime game. So my stats were insane. But that was the fun to be like, oh, I actually was recognized on the full national scale.
Yeah, that is very impressive. And it's funny that you bring up the women's and men's scoring. I guess shout out. This is the first episode of The Hours to two female hosts and guests. So that's fun. Shout out to Mark and Tyler. They're both at clinics this week with our Savvy coaches, impacting our community across the U.S. right now. So best wishes to them. Camille and I are happy to hold it down in the meantime. Some of you may recognize Camille if you're part of our membership. She's part of our shooting system videos. She's in some of the training recordings with our academy. So beyond just all of her illustrious accomplishments, she's near and dear to the Savvy community. Also trains and coaches with our academy in Phoenix, which is really exciting. A great role model for the girls that we train and have on teams there. What have you been doing since you got back? Like, has it been mostly focused on individual training, or are you in preparation for anything in particular?
Yeah, well, when I got back from France, and the next day I started a 3x3 camp with Team USA. They were doing a tournament actually here in Arizona, and then prep for World Cup. So I had a week of that. And then this is probably the first time in 4 years where I haven't had to play. Like, immediately after, I mean, I did have that, but now I actually have, like, a sizable 1.5 month break. So it's been a little weird. I'm definitely a workaholic. I like to do the skills training, but I'm trying to be a little bit smart. I'm still probably working out more than most people, but just less than my normal. So a lot of lifting and cardio right now to just start feeling back like myself. I didn't do a ton of lifting in France. Still some, but just not my normal. So I wanted to get, like, my baseline strength back, and just, we did a lot of cardio. So I wanted to maintain cardio. And then really just, I've been trying to get my shot back working with Tyler. Not that you can necessarily lose it, but I was taught a lot of different things in France. And one of my curses I decided with Tyler this week is that I'm too coachable. So I'll take any feedback. I want to learn. I want to make improvements. So if a coach tells me something, I'm like, okay, let's do it. And I didn't really realize how much he had changed my shot throughout the course of this past season. So yeah, really a lot of shooting workouts, lifting, and trying to get in with Savvy, get some skill workouts once or twice a week.
Nice. Awesome. Well, yeah, I know you are a work ethic model, an exemplary person for that. but I think our coaches will get a lot of value, seeing as you've played for different coaches across the globe in different systems. Like, you know, some of the savvy systems, the savvy approach to coaching. But I'm curious, to a conversation that's been happening in our community recently, is just like how to choose what shape they approach their offense in, how to get back into that. What actions are the best ones to start with, or the best ones to go back to? Which series should we choose for our team? So I'm curious, with your experience, different coaches, different system, different countries, have you noticed a big difference of specific actions country to country that you played in, or things that kind of cross cultures?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a different style in Europe. One of the first like actions I was like, oh my gosh, everybody runs this. It's just like your five out motion and transition. Like, I think more in the US, at least when I was playing transition, there was running to get like racing to get a layup. And then we actually had kind of transition plays. A lot more of overseas is just like a five out motion where you have backdoor lift, ball screen, and it just continues and continues. And then most of our on-floor action, it does depend where I've played. Like, I've had a couple traditional coaches, and you have like one or two posts and three out, or four out, one in the post. And you're like, this past season, we were really trying to make sure we always got a post touch, which I haven't had to do that in a while. So that was a bit different. I've never seen overseas them use high post action, is unfortunate. That's why I killed in college, because I could dominate the high post. It was like just inside the three, I could still have room to drive. But yeah, I've never seen much high post action overseas. It's really motion, get things in speed, strings and speed. But of course, every coach I've played for has something a little bit different.
In case people need an intro to our third guest, who do we have chiming in from the background?
We got Izzy here, my little niece. I'm on double duty, so such cutie.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think Izzy needs a savvy onesie. We have those in stock. Coaches, don't be trying to order them. They are custom made. But Tyler's youngest has a savvy onesie. Mark's youngest has a savvy onesie. So I feel like Izzy is the third baby on that list. Nice. I know you know a little bit about the savvy systems, race in space, drive in space, some of our like racker, dragon, some of these roles that we use, the language we use, the principles that we value. Have you noticed a focus on any of things that look similar to that, like focusing on transition, really trying to get something in the first 7 seconds, emphasizing nines and sevens, like that type of shot selection? Or does that seem unique?
I think like the verbiage that you guys use is really unique. I've done a little bit this year of like, hey, let's do some drills where we try to score in the first 7 seconds, but it's not like a year long emphasis of this is what we're trying to do. It's like, hey, let's try this today in practice to speed up our transition. Or honestly, I think we used it more of, hey, the other team runs a lot. We're going to try to score in 7 seconds today in practice so that the defense can work on getting back. So I don't think they consistently will emphasize those things that you actually want to be doing year round. It will just come up from drill to drill. Honestly, like dragon, I've never seen overseas. That's more of something I had in college. I think racker, the concept of the point guard trying to get to the rim, is pretty popular overseas. Like, I think they want them getting to the rack as much as possible. Racing is always a big thing. Space, the talk about space. I don't think I've been on a team where we ran it greatly. But I think also that's the same. I appreciate that savvy is like very specific with their terms. So it's very clear where you get to. I think if you're just telling people, like, get down the floor. Okay, sometimes go corner. Okay, like, just get out. Like, it's not as clear. And I think it makes it harder. Even as professionals, players don't exactly know where to go. So I like the terminology in savvy to make it very clear where you're running to, what space you're trying to make.
Yeah, no, I love that. I know you've had experience with both 5-on-5, 3x3. Like, you just finished a, I guess, 8-month season in France, 5-on-5. But now you're shifting back into that 3-on-3 mode. How do you adjust like your mindset? It's still fast, but in a different way. But then the spacing obviously is quite different. So how do you shift your mind into the spacing needed for 3x3 or the actions that are different in there?
It's not actually that much of a mind shift. I think the biggest shift is like, oh, I just did a 5-on-5 season where we didn't practice ball handling, or I was in the post for 8 months and I'm actually an outside player. So it's more of like refreshing my skill set. I personally think that even though there's more space in 3x3, like it's generally your same actions in 5-on-5 without, I don't know, a lot of actions, at least that we run. It's really three people and two in the corner doing nothing, or one initiates and it's really three people that are mainly involved in the action. Like you have the screener, someone using it, and someone with the ball. So I don't think it's that big of a shift. I think maybe there's a couple more slips in 3x3. But I think those work in 5-on-5 anyways. I think it's more that 3x3 makes me play better in the offense on 5-on-5 because I am so aware of how to use space and angles. I don't think of 3x3 as being like, oh my gosh, there's so much more space, because you can be so physical and just shove people that you really can't get to the extra space that's there.
Man, I saw some of the clips of, I think it was this most recent series, maybe the one in Arizona, of you were just getting bodied. Oh my God, it was wild. I know I've seen it before, but there was a couple clips that they posted on Instagram where I was like, wow.
That last tournament, people were watching, they're like, oh my gosh, it's so physical. And I was like, this is nothing. Like when you get to the pro circuit, what the refs allow is pretty crazy, which some people that are new get frustrated with, but I feel like it's part of the game. You know, you just don't give up anything easy. You're allowed to be a lot more handsy and pushy as long as you don't knock anybody over.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you already did it. Like that was a pretty good sell job on 3x3, and most of our coaches within Savvy understand the value of playing 3x3, whether it's FIBA rules or just to work on their actions in a smaller sided game. But if you could pitch to any of the coaches listening that are not savvy yet, the value of incorporating FIBA 3x3 into their practices, like how, what would you say?
I could give a big list. I think I would start with just individually, like in my perfect world, I don't think high school, or at least under high school, should be doing AAU in the summer. Like they should just be doing 3x3 tournaments. I wish that was a format that we had. But I mean, with five players who are not great at basketball yet, the ball movement's not great. There's not a lot of touches for players. So I think the first thing is like individually playing 3x3, you get so many more touches in such a short amount of time, like in a 10-minute game span or however long you try to game it in practice, like everybody gets to touch the ball and try something that you just worked on, which I think has been really great with Savvy. Like, okay, this past week we're working on our one count or two count pick up or dribbles. And it's like, okay, I can actually now implement that right away when we switch to 3x3. If we were playing a full court 5-on-5 game, that's less touches where I would be able to get into that action. Maybe there's not as much space. So I think that's the first thing is just being able to play, like getting touches, working on the things that you're trying to work on offensively or defensively, and getting just tons of reps without stopping. Talking about just actions, understanding how actions work and how space works on the floor. I think every action you run in 5-on-5 comes down to three people. Even again, if you use all of them, it comes down to a three-man action. So being able to understand how to use three-man actions. There's just basic actions. 3x3, you add in a lot more stuff like screen, rescreen, slip, hook screens, like all this other stuff. And I'm like, wait, I could use this in 5-on-5 and it would still kill people. And now I watched a WNBA game recently where I saw people using this like hook 3-on-3 screen and everyone was wide open. I was like, oh, can actually move these concepts over. And there's a concept of, I mean, this wouldn't be in practice, but if kids were actually playing real games, there's no coach on the floor. So you just kind of have to be leaders with one another, figure it out together with your four players. And yeah, you don't have that coach just constantly telling you what you have to do. You have to just figure it out on your own.
Coaches, listen up, play some 3x3. We want you to do it. Our drill book has a bunch of variations. Like even if you want different scoring, different constraints, different focuses for your 3x3 that you're incorporating, You can check that out in our drill book, join the membership. You get access to all the conversations like this that we are having around these concepts every single day in the Savvy membership. Related to like coaching yourself on the floor. I know 3x3 has that element, but then even specific to like your situation right now, coming back to Arizona, helping coach with the academy, also doing your own training. Like I've seen you on the floor with 9-year-olds, with 12-year-olds, with college men, like a range of age, stage, levels. How do you focus on like how you coach yourself, how you get the most out of a workout when there's all those differing circumstances?
I mean, especially when I'm with the academy, we're coming off of, okay, we just learned something. So then it's like, I really try to use what we learned. Like, okay, maybe I blow by a 9-year-old, but we were working on floaters. Like, I'm not just going to go take the regular layup. Like, I'll still try to take what we're working on. And it gives more of a challenge for myself anyways. I think one of the most struggling parts is keeping my competitive edge when I'm playing with younger ones. Because I'm like, oh, I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to this. And that always reminds me, like, no, they need to see how you play. They want to see you play your full hard self. But obviously, I do have to scale it back a little bit when you have kids. Yeah, I think just finding a focus, finding that thing that I want to improve on that's maybe a little harder to do. And so that if I do blow by a younger player, then I can still work on it. And obviously, if I'm with someone more of my level, you can kind of work on everything. I still usually have a focus from the workout. But I think the higher your competition gets, the more you can just try to react and play and figure out how you can score better.
I know Tyler has celebrated you before, probably to your face, but also on this podcast and in our community, of just how much of a pro you are, and meaning like how quickly you implement things, right? Like he can deliver a very specific focus on something that you should tune in a read, in a catch, in your shot, and then you do it. Like your focus is next level. It is at that pro level. But how, I actually also want to celebrate you on just like your humility in those situations, because I think it takes a certain confidence to walk into a gym with anybody there, whether it's a WNBA showing or working with youth, and just do what you need to do. Like, you are confident in your skills. You're not worrying about what people are thinking, but also you are humble to the point of like, if we're working on the most basic footwork, like it's not too basic for you, because you're able to apply it and see where that builds into your game. So I'll add that celebration to what you do, and follow it up with a question of, for other players, whether they're 9, 15, in college looking to go pro, like anybody that's looking to take that next step to reach the next level of play, what has helped you in that path get there?
I mean, just to touch on a little bit of that, like, I feel like I've always loved the learning part. Like, it's not necessarily the confidence there. I mean, I have some confidence, but I think it's the learning. Like, I love improving. I love learning. And I remember like the first AAU experience I had, my coach was teaching me footwork and I could just get it. Like, the other girls couldn't figure it out, but something about it, like, I would just see it. I wanted to learn it. I would just do it until I figured it out, where other people would just kind of give up. And then that just early on made me realize, okay, footwork's important. Like, these details are so important and you can train them. And like that, I think that love of learning and wanting to improve is kind of what drives me in all the sessions that I go to. And then, yeah, just the most basic stuff. Like, we were doing basic dribbling yesterday when I was working out with Tyler, and I'm like, no, this is great. Like, I need to work on these little details. I need to improve. I remember my school had a quote from Aristotle we always went by, and it's, you are what you repeatedly do. Excellence, therefore, is not an act, but a habit. So it's like every little detail that I can make habit instead of just like, oh, this is a one-time thing. Because like you said, Tyler will tell me something, boom, I change it, but it hasn't become habit yet. It's not like the repetition. So, you know, really locking into any little detail he can give me that creates the habit, so that I can be excellent in what I do, is I think the way I approach all those workouts.
Yeah, really, really well said. I guess in that journey, in anybody's journey, adversity hits, or the motivation isn't always there. You know, we believe adversity strengthens, and yeah, I've seen you handle that, and I know we've talked a little bit between decisions that you have to make if you're going to take a certain contract or move a certain way, or you know, how long do you pursue a certain goal? For anybody who's facing that situation of like, ugh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I don't know if I can do this anymore. Like, it's in a really hard period. What has helped you through those seasons?
Definitely have a lot of adversity. I seem to manage always to be on a strange situation team overseas, whether it's toxic coach, like clubs that don't pay for the power in your apartment, like something weird always happens. I do think I've very few times struggled with my love of the game. Like, I think that's what always keeps me coming back, no matter what's happening. When I step on the floor, I don't care if we're running suicides, whatever. I just love that environment. So, like, just practicing, I feel like, always brings me back. But I do think there's the faith aspect of, okay, I'm here for something maybe bigger than just playing basketball. Like, when I go overseas, there's not a lot of players that know God. So just remind myself there's more to what I'm doing than just playing here. Like, they're getting to see someone who loves God, who believes in God. Like, I've had players be like, I don't understand why you're so nice. Like, I'm really not that nice. They're like, no, there's something different. How could you be nice to that person when they were just mean to you? Like, how could you do all this stuff for people? And it's that reminder of like, okay, again, I'm here for something bigger than just the basketball. I want the basketball to be the best thing. But no matter what, when I've left a team, like, people are just shocked by the different kind of person that I am. And they don't get to see that in their day-to-day life. So, I mean, that's part of it. I do think there's a time, like, if you don't love basketball, then you don't have to keep pushing through it. But if it's something there that you want to do, or you think, again, there's that extra layer of maybe God's given me a purpose besides just hitting all my shots, you know, then it's something that's worth sticking through. I had a shooting slump this year, and it was just like the games felt miserable. Not when I'm in, but they felt miserable when I get put on the bench because I can't hit anything, you know? So I think those are the times where you're just like, dang, like, what, I put in all this work. Like, what is the point of struggling through all this? But I mean, I just know in the end that I love it, and I know what I'm doing outside of basketball is also good.
That's so beautiful. I love it. Really, really well said. I feel like speaks to obviously the adversity in the savvy framework. Adversity strengthens, but the identity commits part. Like, we always start, right, when we're framing something, with the simplicity. We go through the savvy framework in order, you know, simplify everything, reframe how you see adversity, define your victories, and then commit to that identity. But really, like you said, like, the identity actually comes first. Like, if you have that simplified, really core, strongly held belief in who you are, your purpose, all of those things, everything else gets a little bit easier. So, love that. And that actually works really well with my last question for you. It's very topical for our coaches and our membership next month, June. Oh my gosh, this week. We're going to be starting a new deep dive. Each month, we go through a certain topic with Savvy. So we've been going through player development. We hit our off-season planning. The next deep dive that we're doing is a 30-day challenge on the Savvy Culture Blueprint. What that means to people, how they can really transform their program from chaos to cohesion. You can sign up on our website. But I'm curious for you, like, culture, obviously identity is so tied to that. Again, you've faced all these, a variety of coaches, a variety of literal cultures. But what does culture in terms of basketball, in terms of a program, like, what does culture mean to you, and how has that played an important part in the teams you've been on?
I think now my baseline for culture is savvy. Like, I just, every time, like, in my early days of working with you, I mean, not that long ago, I guess 2 or 3 years, I just would leave feeling so filled after a workout. Like, I would try to explain it, like, my faith meter was filled, even if we weren't talking about God, like, something about those relationships and the way that we work. Like, I just always left happy and, like, filled. That was the only way I could explain it. So I think that is now in my mind of, like, a culture is you just feel filled up. You feel loved by the people around you. And it, again, it wasn't anything. People weren't every day being like, I love you. Like, yay. Like, we're doing Bible verses today. It was just the way we trained together, how we trained. Like, I just left with that whole feeling. Yeah, definitely with a lot of different experiences. I don't think I've had a great culture situation yet, but I've had some glimpses. I think college was nice in some ways. We were rebuilding a culture. I had three head coaches in my first 3 years, which was always like people left when the new coach came in because they didn't like their style. So it was a lot of rebuilding, but there I got to see the kind of the process, and now they've been a pretty good team. And it was really just like, okay, that culture build was just about habits and can we get people to love the game and to want to put in the work? Because we're at like Ivy League school, the pressures were high. People put focus on school. They put focus on their social life, and basketball kind of came last. And now that culture's shifted a little bit. But definitely with all the people leaving and stuff, there's a lot of drama. And I think it was hard to have a good culture from the start. I think one of my best culture situations was probably Sweden. And I think that was just more about environment. We had 12 girls, none of them worked, none of them were in school, like just full-time pro. We had our own gym. Like, it was just very professional. So I think that for me made it nicer. Like, everyone just came to play basketball and they love playing basketball. And there was no outside distractions. I think also practice-wise, we played a lot. So maybe some drama between players at some points, but generally we played in practice and just like worked through everything. And it was just, I think I've never played so much in practice in any other season that I've been a part of, but I think that was nice. It was just like, we go, we play, we put in work. Obviously there was probably smarter ways. Like, now that I've been with Savvy, I think, okay, some of the times we played, there could have been a goal besides just like first team 10. But I think that the playing at least got our competitiveness out. Like, I've been on teams where the whole practice is structured. Okay, it's rebounding drill, and I could tell you what's coming next, and this drill, and this drill, and this drill, and then there's only 5 minutes of playing at the end, and it's just like, we want to play, you know? And then even this last season is interesting on the culture. I think it was very toxic in certain ways, but the girls I've never been so close with. Like, it was one of those situations where it was so hard. My season started with 30 straight days of two-a-days, no days off. And all 2 to 3 hour practices always ended on the track. They'd just be like, go out there and run. We'll come back and get you in an hour. And the girls just held themselves to a really high standard. Like, I was in pain. I work hard. I'm a workaholic. But still, when they would send us like in the forest to run, I'd be like, guys, they can't see us. Let's just walk. And our captain and the other good players on the team would be like, no, like, they sent us here. We're doing it. So it was just like this accountability to work really hard. And we all worked hard together, that I just felt this like, man, we want to win because no one's working like us. We're doing this together. So, yeah, I feel like I've seen a couple different kinds of culture. Then our coach was definitely a yeller. I wouldn't say that was helpful to the culture, but we did have like the bond of the team that just made us work hard together before. So yeah, nothing ideal other than my Savvy time. And obviously, I didn't get to play games with Savvy, but a lot of different cultures. I think I appreciate the coaches that don't yell as much, but are still passionate, and you just can feel they want you to be better. I think where I see players fall out is when they have this like, oh, it's a personal attack. It's this, like, they don't feel like their coach wants them to succeed. Which I've definitely had that feeling, and it sucks, like, if a coach doesn't want that for you. And then player-wise, you know, if maybe it depends on the player, but I feel like I feel the culture more with players that want to be there, want to win. A lot of people playing basketball that just their parents make them show up. They've just done it for a long time. It's not really their passion, and you still have to find a way to work with those as a coach. Like, they're still going to be there, but it's definitely not helpful to the culture if they don't really want to be there and win.
That's interesting that the most recent season it was more of a player led. Do you feel like that motivation or like the drive to win, to work hard, to stick together was somewhat of a player led thing, or like kind of stemmed from the fear or intensity or anger of the coach, or is a mix of those?
I think it was a mix. I think it was just, I really went into this season afraid. Like, I think I told you I had to run a 6-minute mile. I'm just like, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to get cut. And no one ran a 6-minute mile. So that was just like the fear, but I think, yeah, the standard from the beginning is we go hard and there's no other option. And there were 2 or 3 returners that were like, this is how it is. We do it. So they kind of brought the culture in from the year before and everyone followed along. And just like, even fans and the coaching staff told us they've never seen a team work like that. Like, he's pushed other teams like that before and it hasn't been the same response. And maybe we had 1 or 2 that would have generally been more lazy, but they had to just stay up because the rest of the group was doing it. Like, so you just had to keep pushing. And even like, probably again, it wasn't the most healthy. Like, we had injuries and it was like, no, we all work hard. I played my first month with 2 pulled groins. Like, I just kept ripping one side or the other every week. And it was just like, no, we work hard. We keep going. But it was the best basketball I played in my first month and a half because I had no other thoughts in my mind besides like one step in front of the other. Like, I was just so tired. So I do think there's some, like, I've heard it before, like, college, if everyone hates the coach, if everyone can bond and hate one thing, which again, maybe is not the best way to go, but I've always seen that doing something hard together just makes you closer. So I know in modern times, we try to be a little bit softer on our players. I don't know if there's a way to do hard where you don't feel like totally attacked, but I've seen in every team, anytime we've done something hard, it brings you closer.
Choosing. And I think most of our savvy coaches find some sort of way to build in that battle of, yeah, adversity. And it's on purpose and it's needed. It's required. It's essential to create that bond. But figuring it out in a way that is helpful instead of harmful. Lots of different options. We'll be talking about that a lot throughout June because, yeah, there's different styles to it as well, right? Like, you want to be authentic to who you are as a coach. So not losing any of that passion. I know Tyler, Mark, all of us online, but also in person with the Academy have gotten the feedback like, oh, I don't know if I could be that stoic, or I don't know if I could be that level-headed, or I don't know if I could be that articulate. Like, you don't have to be. You can be passionate, you can have moments of, you know, emotion, and you can use strong, like, firm tones and language and get excited and get angry, but there's that identity behind it, which I think is relevant to even just like the language we use. We're using culture right now because that's the understood verbiage that people use, but really we talk about identity of our teams, that if culture is how we do things, like, identity is really who you're becoming. So yeah, there could be a culture, maybe by accident, that the players have made instead of you as a coach. But, you know, can you guide the shared identity of a team and who they're becoming through some, you know, savvy methods? I think is definitely doable and something I'm excited to talk about with coaches over the next month for sure.
I do think, like, the coaches yelling or getting in their emotions, like I said earlier, like, if I have the trust that my coach wants what's best for me, then the yelling just, I can respond like that. Like, oh, you want me to do this? Boom, I'm going to do it. You want this? I can do it. You're mad at this? Okay, no problem. But when you have if you haven't built the trust with your players, or they don't know who you are as a coach, like, they don't know your identity, then I think it's harder. You get yelled at and you're like, oh, he hates me. Like, oh, they're so mean. So I think there is, like, you build the trust and then you can be totally, like, not totally emotional, but you can show emotion. Like, I don't mind being yelled at if you're giving information, if you're helping me make a change. I even talked with my coach this year. I'm like, you spent the entire time out telling one player they're stupid. I was like, we could be learning a play. We could be talking about what we could fix. Like, and he actually made that change. Like, he'll still yell at people, but I was like, all right, if it's a timeout, please don't waste my time. And he started to, I was like, whoa, he actually listened. But I think there's ways to have your emotion and be passionate about the game, but also recognize who your players are and find the best way to motivate them.
I love it. There's different ways to do it. Before I let you go, I'm curious, with you having it's been savvy a couple years, you've been in our community a little bit, if you could give us like one takeaway that you've applied to your playing, to your coaching, to life, like what resonates most with you from the savvy approach to coaching, to basketball, to life? What is it for you that sticks?
I think coaching and playing wise, it's the clarity. Like, I guess that's the simplicity, but just everything is labeled and so clear. Even I helped coach this weekend and the other coach was just like yelling, go there, do this. Like, it's just chaos. And I was like, all we had to say is lock left, snipe. Like, I just think the clarity of your whole system, like, hey, we're in rose action, we're going fingers. It wasn't so much, I think you guys call it like remote control coaching, like you're trying to manage everything, like push of the button. And I just feel like the simplicity just makes it easy to coach, makes it easy to play. I understand what my role is when I'm playing with Savvy. So I think that part is really cool on the basketball court. And I think just life-wise is getting to see like Tyler live his faith totally out in the open. You don't have to hide it. Like, we pray after sessions. I think that's been cool to see is, oh, I can do basketball and faith. I've never been like purposely trying to hide it. But it's like, oh, you don't talk about it in the gym. Like, we'll talk about it later. But now it's like, no, you can be totally open about who you are and what you think on the floor. And he brings in metaphors all the time to help the girls. Like, you don't have to keep it just basketball when you're on the floor. And I think that's been the more life thing that I've gotten out of being with Savvy.
Hey, there's some good lessons in that book, you know? We can bring them onto the court. I love it. Well, hey, I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing your time, your insights with us today. To all of our listeners as well, thank you for spending the hours with us. We are Savvy Coaching. Until next time, stay savvy.